This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hi guys, and welcome back to your weekly Stoke City podcast, Every Step Along the Way. So this week we'll discuss the loss versus Luton, we'll discuss the hot topic that is Michael O'Neill's position at the club, the news from around the club this week, and of course we'll look ahead to Bournemouth this weekend. And as always, welcome back to the pod, Andy. How are you doing, mate? You okay?
All right, a little bit tired after I've, you know, started getting back into the workplace, but we're doing well.
Too many backstrokes, mate.
Too many backstrokes and front crawls.
I'm sure you haven't been quite that energetic, but how are you, Dan? You okay, mate?
I'm pretty good, mate. Thank you very much. Slightly demoralised by, you know, the lack of a playoff push that we seem to be doing. But, yeah, I'm all right other than that. Bearing up under the strains. Got a date for the baby and all that business, so it's all, all countdown now.
If you're happy to disclose it on air, mate, when's the potential date?
She's booked in for a cesarean on March the 22nd.
22nd? Bloody hell. It's getting very real now, isn't it?
I have told she's going in Sunday in hospital, admitted Sunday, having a Tuesday, so I've said make sure it's a Tuesday and not a Wednesday because Wednesday's recording night.
I've said this, mate, as she's pushing, you're going to have your headset plugged in. You're going to be, you'll do what you need to do. You need to get priorities in order.
Exactly. This is it.
And if she's a reasonable person, she'd understand. Anyway, we're actually recording this on a Thursday instead of the normal Wednesday that we normally do. Now, the reason we did that is firstly because I think we were all mentally exhausted. Yesterday, I think, I don't know what point in the game it was, Dan, but me and you messaged each other and you're like, I think you just said, shall we just call it for tonight? Like, as in, we just can't discuss this tonight.
By the time everybody got home, sorted out, you know, settled down, got ready and sort of onto the recording devices, it would have been, yeah, and everyone would have been looking more thinking, can I just go to bed? Forget about this. Forget about tonight.
Yeah. And I think everyone wishes they could forget about last night, to be honest. But So as you can probably kind of tell, I think everyone's feeling a little bit deflated, a little bit, to be honest with you. I think when we came into these kind of two games, especially the Birmingham and the Luton game, I think everyone was looking at these as, you know, look, if we go and win both games, then we've got it. A decent enough chance we can stay. We can say that we're still in it. And I think obviously after the Birmingham draw, you're still half an eye on it. And I think obviously losing as badly as we did against Luton, I think people are emotional because this is probably the first time this season it's all of a sudden season's pretty much over. And I think it's the first time that people are feeling that right now. I think the hope of playoffs is well and truly gone. I know we've got the cup and O'Neill's going to bang on about the cup now, especially if we get through. You know, that's going to be probably our only saving grace to this season. Now, a couple of things I just want to pick up on and I'll let you two kind of chip in. But I think I was listening to bits that Angela Smith mentioned the other night as well. And at one point it was mentioned that it was like watching kids kick a ball around in a playground. And I think that's a bit of an insult to kids kicking a ball around in a playground. I thought at times it was an embarrassment for Championship football. I mean, there seemed to be no plan whatsoever. The amount of times, you know, more, I mean, Harwood Ballas, that was his worst performance of the season for us so far. But either way, they were just lumping it long. Powell, it was his normal influencing self, couldn't do a thing right. The only player for me that can come out of any credit is Joe Allen.
Same with me, mate.
Yeah. He did anything amazing, but you know, he tracked back. He tried to get forward. He was involved. And I think, yeah, for me, that was a... I think that's the big crux of what I take from last night, is that it's the first time this season I think it's over. I think it's done. And if all we've got to say at the end of this season is that we have a better squad, which I definitely think we do have a better squad overall, if that's the only thing we can take out of this and we made no improvements on last season other than that, I think you can definitely say that this season has been a failure.
Well, this season was meant to be a playoff push, wasn't it, from the get-go? But yeah. The one thing that does annoy me about Michael O'Neill's transfer strategy is he sells players in the summer and then recruits in January. That's what I get out of it. Like, to be fair, props to him with his January transfer window. It's been brilliant.
Yeah.
But he didn't do too much great recruitment in the summer, I don't think. But he has kept on to those valuable players like Joe Allen, who yet again is showing the class he has got.
Yeah, exactly that, mate. And I think one player that I know you'll want to have a comment on here, and I'm sure, Dan, you'll be the same, but Tyrese Campbell, that guy's come in for a lot of criticism in the last couple of games. Now, at times, yes, Tyrese could probably track back a little bit more, which is actually something I thought he did plenty of last night, actually.
He did a lot of it last night.
Take him out of that team last night, we probably don't have a shot on target.
Apart from
Baker's goal. Yeah, obviously, yeah, but exactly that.
I think he was the only other one who gave us the other shot on target.
Probably was, mate. It was... I don't get it. And I know a lot of people, you know, Rory on Twitter asked us to discuss the abuse that Tyrese is getting. And yeah, absolutely, mate. I mean, you were asked or you commented on something, I think I saw the other day about Tyrese. And I think somebody got assaulted in the toilets.
Yeah, someone got assaulted in the booth and toilets for backing him up. Like, I replied to a comment saying that it was like playing with 10 men with Campbell. He doesn't offer anything out wide. Where has he played when he's come back? Out wide. What has he done? Well, he's managed to score 2 against Birmingham. They didn't say anything bad about him there. But no matter what he does, he will get stick. Obviously, he's come through the academy. He's come from Man City's academy. Maybe people see him extremely highly of that. But I don't think Powell played well last night. Wilmot didn't play well last night. Timing didn't play well last night. Magia, people had a go at him. He couldn't do anything.
He had nothing to do.
And... mate, Bursic gets stick, but I think the goals that he conceded are, you know, they're stereotypical goals that you're going to concede. It's not like the shot straight at him. They're low-driven crosses that are hard to deal with and you don't really know where they're going to go.
No keeper in the world, mate. It's first one, that cross that comes in, I mean, timing, I think O'Neill said it was part of his hamstring, which is the reason that he didn't get to it. For me, I mean, use the hamstring excuse if you want, you know, Michael, but that's not an excuse. It was poor defending. You know, he's gone in front of his man. The keeper's getting nowhere near that, so you cannot blame Joe for that one. The corner, firstly, the build to the corner wasn't even a blinking, it wasn't to throw it. The ball had gone out for a goal kick, and the referee and the linesman didn't see it. So obviously the play's carried on, and they've got a corner from it. So from there, it's absolutely shocking defending. They've let Jerome just went his way into the box, side foot into the net. Again, keeper can't be blamed for that. So Joe and... well, the two Joes have probably got no arguments last night for me. The rest of them should be ashamed to take a wage, quite frankly. And people, again, we asked on Twitter if there's anything people want to discuss. Now, everybody wanted us to discuss O'Neill and whether, you know, the time's come for him to go. Whether, again, we'll go through poll results on that shortly. But Dan, whereabouts do you stand on the whole O'Neill in, out, shake it all about, mate?
Well, I mean, there was a comment on Twitter, wasn't there, that said, you know, who do you think should be the Stoke manager? And I commented and said, there's one person for me, And I've said, you know, I'd reveal it on here. And that one person is Michael O'Neill. I think 100% he should still be the manager. I hear what Andy was saying before about selling in the summer, recruiting in January. The thing is, since he's come into the football club, he had an absolute mess of a dressing room when he took over. He had egos galore, and he sat, you know, the inmates were running the asylum, weren't they, when Jones was here? Yeah, that was it. And you know, he had no control over, and that's why he failed. That's why he got the sack. And so he's come in there. He's had to get all these egos into check. He's had to get everybody out who didn't want to be here. And he's been strict. He's not fallen into the trap of Jones, where he's tried to reintegrate people like Ndiaye and that. You know, he hasn't given anybody... If you'd shown at some point that you thought you were bigger than this club, out the door. And he's had to be strong with that. And he's probably, talent-wise, cut his nose off to spite his face. But in the long run, he's built a dressing room now that plays for each other. And that is something that we hadn't had for a good 4 or 5 years before he come in. Ever since probably the last, say, 12, 18 months of Mark Hughes' reign.
Okay.
The other thing is, all the money was spent before he got what he wanted. It was a bit like, you know, the cupboards are bare. There's nothing, we're not allowed to, well, actually, the cupboards are full, but we haven't got the lock to get to the money on
it. It's the 9p cans of beans that are left on the shelf, isn't it?
Yeah, we can see, we've hid all the money in the cupboard, but we haven't got the key to unlock it because of FFP. That's the problem. And to me, he's come in, he's had his hands tied since he's come in, and he's wheeled and dealed. Like Sam Surridge, he's brought Surridge. You know, Surridge didn't work out, and he was ruthless. He said, there you go, no, not working out, get him out the door, get him gone, and bring in somebody else. And I think as well, when he's going from window to window, I don't think he really knows. I don't think the club know window to window how much money he has got to spend and what the wage bill can be. So I think that might be why we are selling players, recruiting players, more players here, selling more players and releasing, getting rid of players at different points, because I think it's a balancing act and has been for a good couple of years now.
So for you then, is this summer there? Because a lot of people will say, look, you know, okay, Surridge, he signed him and, you know, he's wasted a couple of million quid. Well, obviously he hasn't, because we've got the money back. So fair enough. Every manager in the world, Alex Ferguson made bad signings. Every single manager in the world makes bad signings. So you've got to forgive a manager for that. At least he's tried. We were lucky and recruited young enough to get some money back. But, you know, people can start...
I've heard people clamouring for a certain former manager, and he made his fair share of poor signings.
The capped one?
Yes.
I must admit, I've not seen Tony Pulis's name mentioned on social media.
I've seen it quite a lot.
Well, I'm not being funny. You know me, I really enjoyed Pulis's time. There's no scenario where Tony Pulis returns to this club.
No.
For me. We've been there.
Yeah, as much.
Twice.
Yeah, and I think, he was fantastic while he was here. It was the right time for him to leave when he did. And I think that his recent roles, especially at Middlesbrough, his most recent one, showed that football has developed beyond what his style allows, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, totally agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, again, people were saying, Luke, when is the right time or the wrong time for O'Neill to go? I'm with you, Dan. I'll put my neck on the block actually a little bit. So I definitely don't think he should leave. And the reason I don't think he should leave is probably for the reason that I think we'd all probably say on this particular pod, is that there's nobody to replace him. I'm sure there's a body out there, but which one's to replace him? But either way, there's nobody better. Now, I'm sure there'll be people listening to this and they'll go, Slaven Bilic, and they'll mention names like that. And I'm looking at the list here. So this isn't obviously an exclusive list, but it's a read in reverse order, pretty much. So Sol Campbell, no thank you very much. Paul Lambert.
No thank you.
Yeah. I knew that one. Neil Warnock, again, dinosaur for me, has moved on. He's one of them managers, though. If you are at the bottom, he could probably drag you out of it, but he's never, ever going to
get you.
He's
like the Sam Allardyce of the Championship.
He
should be looking at Barnsley. They should be bringing him in. Yorkshireman. Barnsley should be looking at Neil Warnock on a 6-month contract.
Another one that was linked with us in the distant past, Gary Monk. Another one, Neil Lennon. And as you rightly said, Tony Pulis is also on the list as well. For me, none of them come close to O'Neill. And I know a lot of people will disagree and all this business, and that's fine. Everyone's very much entitled to their opinions. I've seen, you know, some other names mentioned and, you know, like Diego Martinez and people. And you're like, just like, who do you think we are? You know, we're not going to be able to go and get the some of the other names that have been linked. Yeah, the A-listers.
On that list, you've got like Andrea Pirlo and Zidane. Zidane's never going to come to Stoke.
No, but there'll be some people who think he should, and it's like, look, we need to get real here. I think people are starting to see for what we are right now, and that is nothing more than a mid-table championship team. And it's unfortunate to say that, but that's what we are. And we all saw a table, didn't we, earlier on today? And I think it was Duck Magazine who posted this out. Now, our form, I think, was it since West Brom?
Since I'm going to try West and get Brom. It back up.
Since we beat West Brom, we are fourth bottom. Since we beat West Brom, I think it's 9 points out of 33 at home that we could have got as well. I think it was 9 points out of 33 in general. But either way, to be fourth from bottom, only Reading, Peterborough and Barnsley below us, you know, Bristol City above us, Hull City, who had a disastrous start, Swansea, who had an absolute pile of crap, are above us in 15th. The list kind of goes on. I mean, bloody Luton Town are in eighth. You know, it's inconceivable to think that we are the fourth worst team since that West Brom game.
West Brom aren't much better than 19th, though, are they?
They're not, mate. They've had a ridiculous fall. But again, West Brom will have the same opinion as us, mate. But for me, it's just an absolute disastrous run of games. And I understand people calling him into question, O'Neill. I do understand it. But like I said, a lot of it's emotional because this is officially pretty much the end of our league season. We might be able to go for the cup, but even that's not a foregone conclusion. And someone said to me, it was Dan, it was you, mate. You said, well, if we beat Bournemouth, all of a sudden then we've won a game we shouldn't have done, we've lost a game we shouldn't have done, would you still think that we've got a chance? And my honest answer was absolutely not, because we cannot string anything together to give us a chance. I mean, I think it's 9 points from sixth, but 10 points with goal difference. It's over. It's done.
Yes, it was me who said that to you. I was just wondering, playing devil's advocate, are we, we're no better off, no worse off than what we would have expected if we go and get 3 points from the Vitality. Like you say, we're too inconsistent, aren't we? That is the major issue.
I heard a comment where it said we're sort of a Jekyll and Hyde type of club. We have a good side, but then we have this side where we can't string away wins, which we should.
Do you know what's really interesting, right?
Go on.
And, like, well, I said not really interesting, but the table you just mentioned there, the West Brom.
Mm-hmm.
What happened directly after that West Brom game? Can you remember? Why is the form turned?
Injuries galore, wasn't it?
There was a 2-week international break. Harry Suter got injured. Nick Powell got injured shortly after. Joe Bursic got injured shortly after. Romain Sawyers got injured, didn't he, about 6 weeks later?
He got injured at QPR.
Jordan Thompson got injured that international break as well. So in that, directly after West Brom game, we lost Thompson, we lost Sawyers. And we lose Bursic, that was when we lost Bursic as well.
Yeah, so he did it for under-21s.
Your goalkeeper, your centre half, and at the time was a valuable midfield player, all gone. You've then got Tyrese Campbell, who we were trying to get fit up front. And like I say, a couple of weeks after that, we played Bournemouth. Ironically, we played Bournemouth there, didn't we? And that's when Nick Powell broke his leg. So he was out. And then, like I say, about 3 weeks after that, Sawyers went. So in the space of what? From that game, from about a month after that, we'd lost the complete spine of the side.
But how long can he keep using that as an excuse? Because it's a valid reason. I've agreed with you previously, and I do agree. But we still went into that January window. We had a good window, and we were still very, very much in touching distance with the playoffs. So, what on earth has happened? Especially last night's performance. But how have, even then, since those players have started coming back, and since we've signed players which we absolutely needed, nothing's improved.
No, I mean, initially it did. It was very good, wasn't it? And I don't know. The wind was bad at pitch level yesterday. The weather conditions are bad. I don't know whether how much you can also put down to that. You know, it's not. But then that would show a lack of fight. That's not to be, you know, when the going's been tough, when the conditions are bad, we've been outfought by two sides, haven't we? We were outfought by Luton, and obviously we drew with Birmingham because they were, you know, they fought in those conditions, and you know, we couldn't hang on to a lead after we got it. But it's like, you know, we've had it's two vital matches, and they both really are spectacles been ruined by the weather. You know, it's not as if Birmingham played lovely football and we were rubbish. It's not as if Luton have played us off the park and we've been dire. They've been two poor games. And can you really say, is that due to, you know, the fact that both teams are poor? Does that lend itself more to the fact that the conditions weren't able to play the, you know, nice, attractive football? We've attempted to, at least on Saturday at Birmingham, I think we attempted to. And that maybe wasn't the right way to go about it.
They kept thumping it long when you need to play it across the ground.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's like when Phil Jean Bidet went off last night and Jacob Brown come on, to me, I mean, he's getting slaughtered for having no plan B. To me, that was a perfect substitute because Jacob Brown should be the exact kind of player you want on in that kind of game.
He did make a bit of an impact.
Yeah, after he let the ball roll out under his foot after that he picked up.
One of the best moments I've seen.
But do you know what I mean? Like, to me, that's exactly the same substitution I would have made. I would have brought Jacob Brown on, and I would have said, you know what? It's not working for Jaden tonight. Get him off. They've marked him. They've booted him about a bit. They've roughed him up. It's not working for him. Get Jacob Brown on because he'll run in the dirt. He'll run into the wind. He'll harass people. He'll probably pick up on loose balls when it's bobbling about a bit and people struggling to control it. And he did. He forced a couple of mistakes, didn't he, in the final third, and we picked up advantage. We just couldn't obviously then create from there. But you look at a very small pool size in these two games. You know, no one was complaining a couple of weeks ago, were they? I know at Forest people said how well we played, and you know, there's been games before that since January where we've been all excited. I think we've had two home games where we thought we were going to get 6 points and we've ended up with one. But like I say, it's a very small pool size, and I do think there is extenuating circumstances regarding weather you've got and stuff like that. Not saying they're exempt from criticism by any stretch, but I don't think it's nailed on, you know, short case that we are terrible.
So is it more of a lack of mental?
If any criticism can be aimed at them, I think that's it. They haven't fought enough last night. They didn't get, you know, they were very passive. That's probably the perfect word I could use for them. They were passive. They didn't pick the tempo up, and they didn't get stuck into the game. They sort of allowed it to just unfold.
So I think overall then, from all the griping that we have done, I think we're all saying that O'Neill stays.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly he needs to be given a chance this summer. So we're going to have about 6 or 7 players at least that are going to be out of contract. So if that's the case, he's going to get the summer. He's going to get a chance next season. And if we have another season where we finish around where we're going to finish, about 14th-ish, if there's no improvement, then I think the majority, I don't think he'd make it to the end of the season if that was the case. But if he did, that would be it, I think, for a lot of people. Because that would be, for a lot of people, just a step too far of no more advancement again. And I'd probably argue that that would probably be enough for the owners as well. If we haven't made any improvement, despite having several windows at that point, for me, that will be the cutoff. But I think we're all probably saying that we'd keep him. So, okay, that's fine. We had a couple of in and out polls for O'Neill because, again, people were asking us to. So Twitter and Facebook, I did two separate ones. So on Twitter, staying, now this is really close. So it's to stay, it's 33%. To go, it's 39%. And undecided was 29%. So there's a lot of people on that fence, and a lot of people have just been tipped over the fence, and the, you know, the backsides are hanging off it. So quite close on that one. Now, obviously, it's more of a numbers rather than percentage on Facebook, but the majority are very much in favour of him staying in the Facebook group. So there's 50 people who said to stay. There's 12 who said that he needs to go, and there's 2 people that were undecided. So quite a bit of a contrast, actually, there. So I think we've got I think most people are quite emotional on Twitter, I think, by the sounds of that, and that's fine.
The first place people go into
it is, yeah, absolutely. So interesting. But man of the match polls as well. So Dan, me and you had a bit of a funny back and forward on this. You sent me over a few names, and 3 names. Alan, we both agreed on, and I think we'd all agree that Alan has to be on there. You gave me 2 other names. I was like, nope. Thought they played crap.
So, what were those 2 names?
Was it Harwood Ballis and Moore?
Yeah, it was the two centre halves.
To be fair, I will give Harwood Ballis props for carrying on when he got knocked down near the end.
He got stretched off in the end, didn't he?
No.
He got stretched off after the game, didn't he?
Did he?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't see that.
Apparently so. I didn't see it either, but apparently so, yeah.
Hobbling around.
Well, so I tell you what, we're going to be struggling to put out a fit team at the weekend then, by the sound of it. But yeah, anyway, yeah, so the man of the match polls. Oh yeah, so O'Neill's fault, that one. So yeah, obviously Alan, as we've already discussed, he was in there. Baker, for the 3rd week in a row, makes it into the top 3. So it was Alan, Baker and Moore actually made it into there, mate. So again, Alan was always going to be on there. I think it was just a struggle for the others. Now, personally speaking, if Baker hadn't scored, an absolute screamer, I don't know if he would have been on this list, if I'm honest with you, but people wanted him on there. So anyway, 3rd place was Moore with 5%. 2nd place was Baker with 22%. And then first, romping home, was Joe Allen with 69%. So quite clear who won that one. So if everyone's still got the will to live, is there anything else that you guys want to go into before we move on to the Stoke news?
Not really. It's just, you know, people at the actual ground gave stick for O'Neill making apparently a pointless substitute of Maggi to Fletcher. But Fletcher did. I think I counted the amount of headers he won when he came off, and it was about 7. And I think that was the most amount of the team combined in the whole game. He made a very good effort, apart from the handball, which he stupidly gave away.
he's obviously just trying to do something different. Once he still wanted a target man. Obviously, Maggi, he must have thought, was, you know, tired. And we've only got one other target man at the club, so I suppose there's not much of a choice to make there. I suppose I'm not quite sure who else we would have brought on who's a target man like that. But yeah, fair enough. Again, everyone's entitled to their opinions. So I think that pretty much covers off the obviously the Luton game. I'm pretty sure we can still make it through to the rest of this pod. So
we hope so.
Yeah, I hope so. So let's go on to the Stoke news anyway. Okay, so to kick off the news for this week, so interesting one that's actually not been covered by the club just yet, unless I've missed it. But obviously, Alex Aldridge apparently is going to be going back to Millwall, having only come obviously this season for us. Now, I must admit, I really am looking forward to the fallout of this, because, I mean, since he came, I personally feel that the actual quality of the incomings has been better. We've obviously got rid of a lot of players as well, and obviously has a big hand in getting a lot of our youngsters out on loan as well. So, I mean, in terms of this one, I don't quite understand it. I don't know if either of you have heard anything about why he's all of a sudden packing his bags, but I'm a little bit confused on this one.
Just seems to be all of a sudden. Maybe he just enjoyed how Millwall are as an academy project.
Well, I was thinking the only thing I can think of is obviously the upcoming changes to the structure of the club. Is it one of them that maybe, you know, he came as a, I don't know, not as a
temporary
such,
fix?
You know, yeah, maybe. So, you know, it's a thing for Tony Scholes, and obviously Tony Scholes has gone and bits like that. Is it just the fact that he just doesn't agree with the structure? Because, or maybe it's personal. I guess no one really knows the answer to this. And again, it's not been confirmed by the club. It's just there's a lot of sources saying he's going. I mean, Dan, what do you think about the whole Aldridge situation, mate? I mean, do you think things have improved? A lot of people have been saying, you know, they're really not happy about it because they feel it has improved since he walked through the door.
Yeah, to obviously it has. I mean, the predecessor got a lot of stick, didn't he? And seemed to be the you know, the bane of all of our issues, Mr. Cartwright. You know, he was given given all the abuse, wasn't he? And then obviously now moved on to Tony Scholes once Mr. Cartwright had left the building. And it does seem to have picked up, but again, we don't know the ins and outs and why these deals are being done and when they're being done, the reason for it. So it could just be coincidence that when he's walked through the door, you know, that we have got rid of, I think it was more the outgoings, wasn't it, that there was the main sort of it. Like, we've been able to get rid of a lot of players and people saying, well, you know, why couldn't we do that before? You know, how come we can get rid of all these players now and we can't? Now, since we've spoken to Kieran Maguire, obviously we know that because those players were in the last year of their contract, once June the 30th ticks past, it, for FFP purposes, you just get them out the door because you've amortised their value across the length of their contract by that point. And if we'd have got rid of them any sooner, FFP would have caught us out sooner. So it's all been a juggling act, and I'm sure that was more down to Tony Scholes, you know, balancing those books than it was, you know, Cartwright or Aldridge.
But yeah, it'd be interesting.
Having said that, obviously, I think Alex Aldridge, his contacts, especially down south, seem to be, you know, paying dividends. And it's just interesting why has he gone back to Millwall? To me, I mean, no disrespect to Millwall, but to me, that is like a smaller club, you'd imagine. You wouldn't imagine there was as much scope in terms of transfer dealings and what's possibly coming in and out.
Maybe he's best buds with Gary Rowett.
it was
mission accomplished. yeah, well, it'd be interesting, mate, to be honest with you. I don't know how it's going to go. We obviously want to see this new structure. Until we know who's coming in this new structure and how it's all really going to work, who knows? Maybe there isn't room for a person of his nature. I really don't know. But yeah, I know there's a lot of people who weren't very happy with that. Okay, so a bit more of a positive light as such. So ITV have got the highlights for the next two seasons, I believe. So I think it's Championship, is it League One, League Two, etc. They've got the rights for. So, I mean, I'm not sure about you guys. And did any of you ever really watch the Quest highlights package?
I don't think I've ever watched it on Quest. I watched the 2-minute highlights on YouTube, and that seems to be enough. It has the key bits, but...
I have it on series record.
I must admit, I've only watched it a couple of times. Now, obviously, the bits that I do like is that obviously the highlights, extended highlights, will be on ITV Hub. So you can go watch them at any point. It'll be easier to get to. For me, Quest, I ain't got a clue where that is on the planet. It's a nothing channel. So
weird,
for me...
problems.
Yeah, exactly. But for me, that's just it. It's like, I don't know where it is, and I couldn't care less to find out where it is. So I mean, I suppose it's one of them. If we would have had some more, let's say, more positive results, maybe I would have watched it more. But yeah, I mean, either way, I'm not overly bothered. I'm glad it's easy to access. But again, I never really watched them in the first place. So
I think Colin Murray did a very good job with it.
Yeah, he did. But I think they were always very respectful to us anyway, weren't they? I never seem to remember them having a bad word to say about us.
No, I do like saying, they had good panellists on as well, people who know the league. It was players who played majority of their career in there, who were names that people recognised. And so, you know, and were affiliated to clubs and stuff as well. So, and then also, I think they've also had, like, you know, podcasters and stuff on there as well. So they don't, you know, they were quite open and stuff. And they got some good panellists, give some good feedback.
Oh, but Dan, yeah, you should have kept that quiet, mate. That's the whole reason I don't like him. They didn't invite us on. Give it away.
But I think ITV, obviously, are they're a bigger company, aren't they? I think, is it Channel 5 they own Quest?
Is it?
Yeah, I think so. So
no clue, to be fair.
Yeah, so I think ITV, obviously, are a bigger company. They'll be able to make it a bigger production.
They'll put more money behind it.
They'll be on the ITV hub and that. So, yeah, I think it's a positive move.
Okay, interesting, good. And then just the second to last before we go on to your favourite section, Dan, which is the under-18s, under-23s. Obviously this week, I can't believe this, but was it 22 years since Stanley Matthews passed away? Which,
yeah, it was.
I don't know about you guys, I mean, I don't even think you were alive, Andy.
I wasn't alive, but obviously I've been told.
I was actually joking. No, of course you weren't. I didn't realise that, actually. I was making a bit of a
I've been told tales about him, obviously.
No, you were probably just thinking about Vale at that point. But anyway, 22 years since
he's been conceived.
okay, maybe the mum and dad were thinking about Vale at the time. Maybe. Whatever works. But anyway, I don't know about you, but I remember my wife said this the other day, that standing outside the school is, I think, the procession of his obviously his the kind of funeral car and stuff like that was going through the city. I just remember it being absolutely lined full of people. Everyone clapping, everyone who even wasn't a Stoke fan was there and appreciating it. I can't believe it's been 22 years.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's the Wizard of the Dribble. Yeah, it's, and like you say, he's just, I think it was quite sudden as well, wasn't it? It wasn't, to me, I don't know, I was quite young at the time, but it felt like, yeah, there was no real warning, there was no illness, it just sort of passed away. And like you say, the whole city came out, the whole country, you know, imagine if it had happened today with all the 24-hour news coverage and everything, you know, you can imagine what would have been like, you know, Sky Sports News would have been like for a player of his sort of stature and his history and that. So you can imagine that, you know, how much coverage you would have got.
Yeah, absolutely, man. You know, when I think about the current players around the world, I mean, I question whether, let's just look at the Stoke teams, and I don't want to get too morbid on this because it's, you know, it's meant to be a happy show. But when you know, I don't think you would get that type of reception again. I think times have changed a little bit. I mean, obviously he was due in an era where you weren't paid 57 grand a week or 60 grand or whatever it may be. You know, those times didn't exist. So I just think that he was a man that everyone clearly related to. We'd give his all for the club. Obviously, I don't think anyone's ever going to play as long as he did. And I think that's the big difference now. I'm not quite sure that would ever really happen.
No, I think the only player who comes close to it has sadly passed away in recent times. That's probably Gordon Banks.
Yeah,
I think he's the only one who would get, like, sort of the city would honour him, you know, during, you know, after his passing, but also like the wider, like, you know, the country and the world even. I don't think there's many, you know, Stoke players. I think they're probably the two that would sort of, you know, the news would be get around the world that they sort of passed away and that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, again, it's something I'm sure the club at some point will do something in the future, maybe like the 25th anniversary or, you know, and bits like that to kind of honour him. And I mean, again, I'm not sure if there'll be, I don't after a tribute of some kind, again going on the big screen and stuff like that. But yeah, again, 22 years is incredible. And Dan, how's the under-18s, under-23s been looking this last week, mate?
Soggy.
Soggy,
soggy, yes. The under-23s, they had a game away at Sunderland on Monday, postponed. The under-18s, they had a game at Burnley away on Saturday, postponed. So, yes, soggy and windy. These storms and all sorts went the last weekend. So easy we forget. But yeah, we didn't have there's not much to report on that front. The women did manage a game though. We said the Sporting Calça they were playing, and it was 0-0 after 90 minutes, but they got the winner in extra time. And Staff Senior Cup semi-final it was. So Becky Knight netted the winner in extra time, put us through to the final. And this Sunday, we're at home to Huddersfield. So if you want a bit of a football fix on Sunday, 2 p.m. kickoff, and that's Community Drive. Okay. So, yes, so that's the women. Obviously, the under-18s, they play Burnley away on Saturday. And then the under-23s match up this week. They haven't actually got a game, so... Yeah, they've no game for the under-23s this week, unless Sunderland decide to rearrange that one. But yeah, as it happens, there's nothing. So I suppose all systems go for Palace in the week for the first team. Everyone can go down and have a game.
So it would be interesting to see what team plays against Palace next week, mate. It's blowing on fumes, I think.
I've heard on the grapevine that there were plans put in place for a first ever Every Step Along the Way midweek podcast for that game.
Oh, really? Who's joining that, mate? Because I certainly aren't. I'm no longer a Stoke fan. I'm joining Andy at Vale.
I think I'll just both stick to Stoke this time.
I've got some real Stoke fans in. I'm sure we've got some.
Yeah. I'm sure there's some of them somewhere. But no, yeah, thanks for the updates on those, mate. Yeah, very quiet week then on the under-18s and 23s, but at least one of the members of the club are in a final anyway. Hopefully, we'll be there again soon with the first team, but let's not hold a breath. So that pretty much does it for this week's news. Let's go and have a look ahead to Bournemouth this weekend.
So we head down to the Vitality Stadium on Saturday, and it's probably been a mixed bag. It's not been too bad of a hunting ground for us recently. The last four trips that we've made to the Vitality, we won 2-0 last season, and in 2016 we won 3-1, which you might remember there was a lovely Ginella Imbula side-footed goal from just outside the box.
I remember that.
And the one good thing he really did for us.
It was a lovely goal, that was, wasn't it? Well, between them, we had a 2-2 draw. And Lys Mousset and Ryan Shawcross both scored own goals in that game. So Shawcross scored for Bournemouth, Mousset scored for Stoke. And then the following year, the hosts got their only win in recent times against us at home when they beat us 2-1 the season after. So that ultimately contributed to our relegation. And it was a story of that season, really. Shaqiri gave us an early lead before two late goals turned it around, including a winner by, guess who?
Lys Mousset.
So, like I say, not a bad hunting ground for us recently. I've got some players who played for both clubs. So you can take these off in your head. Asmir Begovic. Obviously, Sam Surridge. Benny Kofobi. Kenwyn Jones, Cameron Carter-Vickers, Adam Federici, Mark Wilson, Sam Vokes, and then we've got two Stoke legends at the end. So I'm going to guess, do either of you know what I'm going to say?
I have no clue.
No, one, Mark Steen. And also, obviously, he played and he managed Bournemouth. And he managed Stoke, Tony Pulis.
Yeah. I must admit, other than those last couple of names, we've not done very well from transfers at Bournemouth, I believe we noticed. I'm not quite sure we'd take any of them right now. Mind you, Begovic one or two, but
I was going to say, Begovic was a decent player.
Yeah, the rest of them, though, can disappear in our history, I think.
Well, yes, obviously, our recent form of Bournemouth's good. And also, Bournemouth's recent home form is not so good. They've lost three out of the last five. They lost 2-0 to Blackburn, and they also had 1-0 defeats to Hull and the mighty Boreham Wood in the FA Cup. Obviously, we defeated by Luton in midweek, but that was our first defeat in six games. But in our last eight away games, we've only been defeated twice. And in that time, we have had wins at Hull, QPR, Luton and Blackpool. So away from home, we're actually in quite good form at the minute.
It's just going to be so stoked to go and win, isn't it?
we appear to be better away than home, don't we, sir?
So that's pretty much, that's all I've pretty much got this week.
You've got, right. So for my start, let's go on about Bournemouth's injury news. Adam Smith, Ethan Laird and Gary Cahill, if you remember who he is, are all back. But out are Ryan Christie, Robbie Brady, Junior Stanislas, their new signing in Kiefer Moore and Jefferson Lerma. Additionally, with their new signings, they signed Kiefer Moore on deadline day, like I've said, but they have done some good recruitment. They've signed Todd Campbell on a loan to buy from Norwich, Freddie Woodman on loan from Newcastle, Nathaniel Phillips from Liverpool on loan till the end of the season. If you remember this name, Siriki Dembele from Peterborough, who is a pretty clinical striker. That is their deadline day signings. And they also signed Ethan Laird in January. Going back to that game you mentioned about the 2-1 loss from Bournemouth, do you know who the only player in that team still remains at Stoke?
Joe Allen.
Yep, Joe Allen. The team that we put out that day was Jack Butland, Moritz Bauer, Eric Peters, Kurt Zouma, Ryan Shawcross, Jeff Cameron, Joe Allen, Choupo-Moting, Badou Ndiaye, Shaqiri and Peter Crouch. With the substitutes of Diouf, Berahino and Konstas Stafalidis.
God.
Yeah.
Jesus. Yeah, Staffy. Bit of a change then.
And then two head-to-head stats. Bournemouth have won five of their last seven league matches against Stoke, which is one draw and one loss, and that's a 1-0 earlier this season. Following a 2-0 win last season, Stoke are looking to record consecutive away league wins against Bournemouth for the first time, which would be a Stoke thing to do. Bournemouth are looking to win four successive league games for the first time since October, which was a run of five, which is a 1-0 win over Stoke. We have drawn each of our last two games on the road in the league, which is a longer run. That which is less than the longest run we've had, which is January 2021, where we recorded six successive draws. And Bournemouth manager Scott Parker has won two of his three league games against Stoke. We're losing one, which his actual one is only one against them. His home won his only home game against them in December 2019.
Pretty impressive stats there, guys. Well done. I'm going to give that a draw this week. I think you.
Dan won up me last week. I had to try and pull out the big guns this week.
No, I think it's a draw, mate. Some pretty cracking stats there. So, yeah, nice one, mate.
I'm happy with a point from that.
Yeah, happy with a point. Me and Dan have got to start making a table of this, haven't we? See who's got it at the end of the season.
That 1 point is going to be more than we get on this quiz this week, just to point out.
We don't know what that is yet, though, do we?
Yeah, bro. Yeah, so we've been brought back down to earth, shall we say, with the last two games, haven't we? But I think, you know, we've got Powell back, Seamer's back, Sawyer's back, Vranchis on the way back, Madge's back, Wilmot's recovered from his illness. I mean, I think that's really affected him the last couple of weeks, last couple of games. We've got out of the win bowl, there is the Bet365, and what is turning into a bit of a toxic fan base, maybe, possibly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do, you know, are we... Or can we still turn the corner? Is there still a possibility of a good run? I think it's going to take a special run from this point to get us anywhere near the playoffs. But are we capable starting this weekend, do you think?
Not a cat and house chance. is my response to that, mate. I think we need to. I think it's important we get a strong finish to the season. But if I remember, I haven't got the fixtures in front of me, but I'm pretty sure that we've got like Blackburn, Coventry.
So after Bournemouth, obviously we've got Palace in the cup, again. Blackpool at home, Barnsley away, Peterborough away, Cardiff away in the space of 8 days. And then Millwall at home, Sheffield United at home, Reading away, West Brom away, Bristol at home, and then the end of the season's Blackburn away, QPR at home, Middlesbrough away, Coventry at home.
That is
a brutal run in, that is.
Yes, but imagine, obviously the thing is, we looking at those results, the fixtures before that, they could go either way. And I think that's going to be vital that we get, if we can put a run together there, which we could do. I mean, it's all doom and gloom, isn't it, after, the last 7 days or so. But we could possibly go into each of those games still the favourite at kickoff to win each and every one. And if we do, for the first time this season, actually find some consistency and put a few wins together, then what kind of momentum does that then take into those games at the end of the season?
Only the players can show us.
The problem is, if we don't get that consistency and we don't get some results in those games against the teams that we should be looking to beat in the next 5-6 games, then the knives and the atmosphere will be poor and the pressure will be sky high going into the tougher games. That's the issue. They need to sort themselves out. Maybe Bournemouth, Palace, they may get 2-3 passes, but after that, there needs to be some serious results going in. Otherwise, you may see a very, well, I don't know how to word it, do you? No.
Drastic.
It could
changes.
Be quite toxic at home because, I mean, let's be honest. Yeah, I mean, we've got, obviously, you know, the season tickets are going to go back on sale. Aren't they, before too long? Is it, again, the early birds, probably matter of weeks away, to be honest. So, obviously, the club don't want defeat after defeat after defeat. I mean, we haven't obviously heard the prices yet. I can't imagine they're going to put the prices up.
I think they're
considering where the world is.
Well, they'll probably keep them the same. If we're lucky, they'll reduce them a little bit, but I don't see it.
No.
Because they've frozen the prices for, like, the past 15 years.
Yeah, so I don't think they're going to go down. I'm sure, just as I'm saying this, I've got Sky Sports on the background and a certain Bradford manager has just popped up.
Mr. Mark Hughes.
Mr. Mark Hughes, yeah. I think it's going to be interesting. I think O'Neill needs a good run of form for his own sake, because if we do have a dreadful form going into the rest of this season, it's going to make his life very hard this summer. It could, as Dan was probably alluding to without wanting to say, if everyone starts really getting his back and shouting for him out at the end of the season, it's probably the time when they would do that. Because
I don't think they would do it before the end of the season.
No, not before the end of the season. They'd let it go, but then it would be done as soon as that last game's finished, which is probably the prime time. Because I think the worst thing you could do is, if they don't 100% believe in him, and I think they do, I'm pretty sure they would do, if they don't believe in him, then they have to get rid of him straight away after that last game, because they have to give another manager time to come in, sign players, go get everything sorted. The last thing we want is for them to just be unsure, let him sign players in the summer, bring us back for the new season, have a really poor start, and then sack him before January, where we've already lost windows and we've lost momentum and lost any potential of going up again. So they need to make the decision before we kick off. Let's just put it that way.
So in short, don't do a Watford.
Yeah, well, Watford sack a manager every season, don't they? But
well,
they've got three managers this season.
I'm surprised Roy Hodgson's still in charge.
I'm surprised he's in charge after all the weather. I've seen him in, like, throwing it down with rain, and the poor guy's being made stand out there.
I didn't think owls liked the rain. Guess so. Anyway,
who's your starting 11 then? Who are you picking on Saturday? Got Bournemouth. Are we sticking with the same formation?
Same formation, but he needs to play a 4-2-3-1 rather than a 4-3-3.
See, yeah, so you're wanting Nick Powell being pushed through the
forward. I want Powell to play that. Is it number 10 role?
Yeah.
Yeah, because when he's playing more of a centre mid and in a proper three centre midfielders rather than two holding and one attacking, he's pushed out. He's not used to effect that he should be.
Okay, so are you keeping Baker and Allen?
I'm keeping Baker and Allen. Baker, Allen, yeah. Powell is our best three that we've got in midfield.
So you're just pushing Powell forward. Further. Who's your focal point? Who's your striker?
Madger. Still keeping him up there. Madger. Campbell and Wright. I put Wright Phillips on the wing. I think Bidace is a bit tired from doing all his running, but I'll do Wright Phillips and Campbell on the wings. I've gone Tymon and Smith as right back and left back. Reason being is, if you are saying about Harwood Bellis being stretched off, I'd put Wilmot back to the centre back position as precautionary, because I think Jagielka and Moore at centre backs is a bit risky in the pace department, and keeping Bursic in goal.
You're not bringing James Chester in, mate?
No. Maybe if he slips me a fiver.
So, I believe Marcus, your team, is that
pretty much the same, mate. I mean, I must admit, I wouldn't mind seeing Sawyers. I'm not quite sure where I put him, though. I think that's the problem. I agree with Andy. I think, you know, those three that we mentioned just are probably the best three in the midfield. Obviously, Mario's back, but again, you question his fitness. I wouldn't mind seeing him maybe getting under 23's game or something. So yeah, I'm with Andy on this one. I think I would go with the same team as him. I think the only question mark may be over Tymon. If obviously he's done his hamstring, don't know if it's going to be just it was in precaution. But left back.
Smith came on for him, didn't he? But you'd probably go Fox at left back. On the left. And then Smith at right back.
Yeah.
I didn't look very comfortable.
Same here with me. I think, you know, Fox at left back is the only real choice you've got, really, if timing's unavailable. He's solid enough. He's not going to give you much going forward, but is that going to be the priority on Saturday? I think first and foremost, we're going to need to be solid in defence, aren't we? And, and not get anything away. And yeah, I think Wilmot started really well at right back, but the last two games, he has sort of been shocking. I mean, I think it took him till the second half to find a Stoke player, I think, on Wednesday night against Luton.
I don't think he made a successful pass for like an hour or so.
No, it was like everything. I mean, there was one point where he tried yards infield and he tried to play out to the byline to Campbell. It got cut out and it bounced back to him. And then he tried to sort of flick it in just into the midfield and nobody was there, but the ball ended up being knocked back to him. Because obviously, just what a scrappy game it was, and then he just launched it down the wing, and Madge just sort of like went for a run after it, and then thought there's no point. And I'm like,
how the game was, mate. It was a game of ping pong.
I've attempted a short pass out wide. I've tried to put it in the midfield. I've launched it down the wing.
What else am I meant to do?
But yeah, I think, like I say, if he has been ill, then maybe that could be the reason. But I think, especially with a two game ban for the next few matches as well, hanging over him, Wilmot, I'd bring Smith back in at right back, bring Fox in at left back. Like I say, even if Tymon's, you know, just feeling it a bit, I wouldn't risk him, not with a hamstring. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm with you actually, Mike. I think Sawyers, it might be worth putting Sawyers at 10, because at the end of the day, we've got how many games left now? 14?
Something like that.
Nick Powell's not going to play 14 games, is he? And he played, you know, he's come back from injury, and, you know, look what happened last time. You know, we played in those three games in a week, and then it was the third game, wasn't it, that he pulled up, you know, with his hamstring, and we were lucky that, you know, he didn't miss any real games with that. It was just like, it just went a bit tight. So we've already had a warning with that. Why not? I don't know whether I'd risk him. I'd rather, you know, Sawyers can play and just say to Sawyers, give us as much as you can. You're not going to give us 90 minutes. Nick Powell can, you know, and then Powell can come on for the last 30 minutes or so whenever Sawyers is, you know, is blowing.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. I think Sawyers was starting to find his feet, wasn't he, before his injury? So I think, yeah, it'll be interesting. I think we'll see Sawyers a lot more before the end of this season. I mean, again, he's obviously only on loan from West Brom, if I remember rightly. So is he someone you might want to see permanently?
So he is on loan, but he's out of contracts in the summer. So obviously he'll be available on a free in the summer. I would say I'd offer him a 2-year contract.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to have too many more suitors, so I think it's probably one of them where maybe if we want it, then it might happen.
Yeah, typically of the Stoke injury case, he has said that he's been playing professional football since he's 18, and he's never had an injury until this one. So he's been playing for 12 seasons, uninjured. He comes to Stoke and obviously picks one up. So obviously, if he is going to be sort of, you know, going for that number 10 role with Powell next season. Obviously, we know Nick Powell's not going to play 46 games, is he? So,
and we know he's not.
Yeah, so we need somebody who we know can play week in, week out. And obviously, Sawyers, by the sounds of it, can do. And also, as well, Sawyers is, he's a good replacement to come on. If you start Powell and, you know, and the results, the game's gone either way. I mean, we don't have many of them fixtures, do we? Let's be honest. There aren't many of our games that are, you know, 2-3-0 either way at any point. But if they are, then we can always, you know, you can rest up Powell and you've got somebody who can come on. Or even if, you know, different games, different styles, aren't they? Because although they play the same role in that, they're not the same kind of player either. So, yeah, I'd definitely keep him on.
Cool. Well, yeah, I think, sorry, Dan, carry on.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, obviously we've seen that, aren't we, what, you know, what we think and, you know, our points on the game and why we think it's going to go, our teams. Shall we hear what the Bournemouth fans are thinking? We've got one. Yeah, let's hear. This is Kirk from Cherry's Red Army.
Hi there, it's Kirk Tovey from Cherry's Red Army, the AFC Bournemouth fan channel on YouTube. And we've been asked to give our thoughts ahead of this fixture versus Stoke at the weekend. Bournemouth season so far, though, yep, pretty impressive. We would have taken second in the league come February if you'd have told us that back in August. And the start of the season couldn't have gone any better, really. Unbeaten in 15 up to about the end of October. Although performances weren't perfect, we were winning narrowly, but we were also getting the points on the board, and that's what was important. Did have an inconsistent mini blip, though, halfway through the season, struggling to beat certain teams generally down the bottom of the league. We did also have an upset in the FA Cup, but wedged in between that and currently is 3 championship wins in a row. And what the Bournemouth fans were looking for is a little bit of character from Scott Parker, a little bit of character from the team. More importantly, could we play for more than just, say, 20 minutes in a 90-minute game? Birmingham did feel a little bit like that. It was one of our better performances in a long time. He dominated for large spells, scored some good goals. Blackpool, though, again, was a tough day. But late on, we found a way to get 2 goals in the last 10 minutes. Last kick of the game from Dembele. We took all 3 points away from Bloomfield Road. And that's not an easy task for a lot of teams this season. So we go into this game off the back of 2 games now being postponed due to the storm, 1 at home due to Forest and 1 against Swansea away. So what will the break do to us? Haven't played since the 12th of February. We'll have to find out. We do have some injuries as well. Kiefer Moore, he came in on transfer deadline day. He's currently out with a broken foot. We also have Ryan Christie sidelined as well, and that's a big loss for us. Although I did talk about Dembele coming in from Peterborough, and he hit the ground running. Cameo against Birmingham, and that goal, as I said, against Blackpool. So he's definitely wanting to show what he's all about. But we also have players that have come in as well, like Ethan Laird, who might get a game at some point in this fixture. Adam Smith's also on the return, but right back's not really where we've had any problems because Jack Stacey has been solid. So we go into this game very, very confident. We hope that we can keep the wins going. We have a good record, I believe, against Stoke City. I think only something like one loss in seven. And I think that was the loss at home last season. So that was at the end, though, when we were maybe focusing on the playoffs. This will be a different sort of game for us. We have a gap now opening in the Championship with games in hand. And if we can win against Stoke, we can sort of try and catch Fulham and separate the teams in the playoffs from us. So I am going for a home win. Maybe Stoke will score. I know they're off the back of a loss at home to Luton, but I do think Stoke will get a goal, but I do fancy the Cherries for a 2-1 win. Enjoy the game, though, and thanks for having us.
Brilliant. Ooh. Thank you for that, Kirk. So, yeah, that's Red Cherries, Red Army. So, obviously, we're missing somebody, though, aren't we? We know the old faithful. The Cherries, Red Army view. Let's get the Gray and McGarry view.
Hi there, you Potters podcast people. Hello there, it's Graham McGarry back again after the international break. I hope you enjoyed your little breather from your football. This is Graham McGarry with that Potters prediction. Let's hope we get it right this weekend. Stoke City 2, Hull City 0. Stoke 1, West Brom 0. Stoke are ready to win at home. 2-0 for the Potters. Well, hello there, you Potters predictors. What's it going to be this weekend on the long trip to the South Coast? Well, Bournemouth are a side that everybody's tipping to go back in the Premier League, but they're not having the greatest time at the moment. And perhaps it's a good time for Stoke City to come back with some points on the board from this long away trip. Michael O'Neill will be hoping his side can hit top form. They're a little bit disappointing last weekend, of course, but then they had that midweek game that they had to contend with. And now they're heading on their travels once again. I'm pretty sure that most people will be thinking this is a game that Stoke won't be getting anything out of. But there could be a shock result, you know. It could be Bournemouth 0, Stoke 1.
1-0, Graham. 1-0.
Off your absolute rocker, mate.
he has got to have taken something with for that.
Well,
drinking.
I'm going to go with him. I think 2-1 to the Marty Potters. For some reason, I just have a feeling that we're going to just keep that flame alive for the playoffs, and it'll all be rosy, and everyone will be going to Palace on Wednesday night thinking, oh, we're still going to Palace.
Well, I saw people saying they wish they'd never brought tickets for the next couple of games.
Oh, God.
Yeah, well, two local derbies.
Yeah, so I must admit, mate, my prediction's 3-0, but to Bournemouth, not to Stoke. Because see what this club's done to me in the space of a week.
You've gone for was it a 4-1 against Birmingham to a 3-0 against Bournemouth the other way?
It's a 6-goal swing.
I'm going down the middle. I'm going 2-2.
Another Desmond.
Well, I thought we'd beat against Nottingham Forest, but obviously we let it slip in the last couple of minutes to that free kick. And I feel like, obviously not them getting their keeper sent off, but I feel like we'll go 2-1 up, have all the hope, and then something's going to cause it to go 2-2.
Right. So
yeah, I wish I could share your optimism.
Hands over the face when it's 2-1 in the 88th minute.
Sadly, I can't go
Hope. Let's hope we're a bit closer with this quiz this week, mate, because I need someone to pick me up.
Right, quiz time then. So this week, there's been a lot of talk, hasn't there, about managers. Mon in, mon out.
Jones, is it going to be the last 10 managers we've had?
No, because you can probably roll them off. What I'm going to do is I'm going to give you the 9 permanent Stoke managers from this century, and I want you to order them in win percentage for Stoke.
Oh, you. I can't. I'm not saying that.
Jesus Christ, man. This gets harder every week.
So, right. So, obviously, current manager, Michael O'Neill.
What's his win percentage?
So, you got Michael O'Neill. There, obviously, before him, Nathan Jones. Before him, Gary Rowett. Are you writing these down?
I'll get my notes out.
Oh, yeah, I'll write them down one sec.
So, here we go. So, obviously, O'Neill, you've got Jones.
Rowett. Got Rowett. Hughes. I know, Lambert, Hughes.
Yeah.
Pulis. Boskamp. Cottrell. And Thordarson.
Okay.
So this is win percentage of all the games that they took.
God.
So you said sorry, I've literally just bloody closed down the flipping notepad. You said Boskamp, didn't you?
Yeah, Boskamp, Cottrell, and then Boskamp.
Well, Cottrell, that could be a bit of a red herring because he only played managed about one game before he chucked us in. Which, to be fair, could actually mean he's got a high win percentage and he's trying it on. Well, Boskamp was very, I'll win by five or I'll lose by five, won't he?
Yeah.
Steve Cottrell didn't have a bad start there with us. It was mixed.
If he didn't manage many games, he could have a high percentage.
That's what I'm thinking, but...
Well, I want to start off, like, what do you think O'Neill has?
I'd say not too bad. I think pretty run-of-the-mill. Because, yeah. He's had
like
a lot of
games. Like this season, it's been around about, I'd say...
Right, I would say, if you look at it as, you've got nine managers there.
Yep.
Two of them should stand out as the bottom two.
Well, for me, Boskamp should definitely be down the bottom. And probably...
Lambert?
Lambert. Yeah, it's got to be Lambert. He was dreadful. So it's got to be Lambert and Boskamp. Yeah, go Lambert and Boskamp. I'll go Lambert being bottom, Boskamp being next. What were you saying, Dan?
Give me your final list at the end, and I'll tell you.
God,
Boskamp.
Maybe Rowett? Did he do too well?
No, Rowett didn't do good.
Maybe put him at seven. But it's like him and Jones, they had very similar managing times, didn't they? And it shows that Jones can only really do it at Luton.
See, Rowett, he won a great, but I think he won more than Nathan Jones.
I think Pulis is going to be near the top. He got us promoted and then kept us up there, didn't he? Got us to Europe. So he's got to be up right there, Pulis has.
Let's worry about him in a minute. So I'm definitely going to go. It's going to be Cottrell.
At seven.
Yeah, Cottrell next. And then after him, Rowett.
Rowett. Okay, and then...
I would have thought... Actually, no, Jones, isn't it?
Yeah, Jones and then Rowett.
Whichever way around you want to do that. I don't think there'll be an awful lot in it, but...
No.
So are we going Jones and then Rowett? Or yeah. Rowett and Jones? Joe Thenrau, okay.
The rest we've got is O'Neill, Hughes, Pulis, and Thoddarson. Or Thoddarson.
Well, Thoddarson will definitely be up there because he had a really good record with us.
Yeah.
He'll be up there with the likes of Pulis and Hughes and all that business.
So we're saying O'Neill at four. Or it's when it gets near the top.
It's one of them again, with O'Neill, the amount of games played. This is the problem.
Yeah, thing is with O'Neill, he came in and managed to save us from relegation as well.
Yeah. So you're going to put O'Neill next, yeah?
I'd say O'Neill next.
O'Neill next then.
And then.
That leaves us with Pulis,
Hughes, and
Thoddarson.
And Hughes.
And Hughes. We'll go Hughes Brentford next manager, then.
At third.
Yeah, go Hughes next. Thoddarson. And then for me, Thoddarson is number one, mate.
Okay, and then go Pulis at second.
Pulis second, yeah.
Okay. So to just check with that, we've got Lambert, Boskamp, followed by Cottrell, Jones, Rowett, O'Neill, Hughes, Pulis, Thoddarson. Do you want to go with that then?
Okay, there you go, Dan. That's
there
list.
We go, Dan. That's our list.
You're not a million miles away.
We will take that. It just depends how many we got right.
How many you got right might sound disappointing, but you're not far off getting the. You know what I mean?
Where the percentage is close.
Right. So, bottom of the list, Paul Lambert. Yeah. 13.3%, two wins from 15 games.
That is awful.
Second bottom, Nathan Jones. 15.1%, six wins from 38 games.
Okay.
Bloody hell. Okay.
Jesus. Third bottom, Steve Cottrell, 23%, three from 13.
Well, we got that one, so that's two right so far.
Now, Gary Rowett's going to be coming for you. You said you had similar records. His win percentage is double what Nathan Jones is. He's next with 31%. Nine from 29.
It must be the amount of games. I was going to say, mate, it must be the amount of games that he had more than 18.
Yeah, well, he had three more wins in nine less games. He had nine from 29.
Okay.
Wow. Okay.
Now, this is probably a surprising one. Middle of the road, fifth place is Johan Boskamp, 35.3%. 18 wins from 51. And then fourth is Mark Hughes, 35.5%. So only 0.2% higher than Boskamp.
Wow.
So we 71 wins from 200 games for Hughes. And then Pulis is only 1% higher than Boskamp, 36.3%, 169 victories from 464 games.
That's not too bad, to be fair.
So in second place, with 40.16%, 49 wins from 122 games, is Michael O'Neill.
That settles the Michael O'Neill in or out debate then.
Exactly. He's 4% higher than Pulis. He's better than Hughes. He's better than all of these. He's 9% better than Rowett.
Bring Pulis back. No.
And then obviously top of the shop. A good 10% clear.
Wow.
Is Gudjon Thoddarson, 77 wins from 154 games.
I remember seeing this one though. It was, he won 50% of his games, didn't he?
Yeah, bang on 50%.
Yeah.
So I don't think you were miles, Yeah, you weren't too far away. But yes. I'm glad I did this because it shows all the Mark O'Neill out people that, in the grand scheme of things, he's not doing a bad job at all.
But you wouldn't have Thoddarson back to manage.
Not now, no, but he's another one I think he sacked too soon.
Yes, he was. To get promoted and get sacked was crazy. But
the very next day.
Well, thanks for that, Dan. I think we're getting better, Andy. Yeah.
We weren't too far out there.
Yeah,
I'm keeping them this time.
giving all the listeners some pub ammo, and they with the mates. Did you know that Michael O'Neill's got a 40.16% win percentage?
Have that.
Oh, yeah. So also 49 wins. So he'd have to win number 50.
How many games has he managed?
122.
It's fairly respectable, to be fair, compared to most managers.
Yeah, 40%. I think over the course of a season. Yeah. You're looking 18, 19 wins. Not bad. Yes, so I think that does it for this week, doesn't it?
I believe so.
Certainly does. Let's hope we've got a bit more of a positive
vibe next week.
Vibe next week. I'm sure everyone's ready to just jump out of the window or something like that. But you got to call it how you see it at times. I think that's just what it's all about.
Indeed.
Right. Well, I guess I'll see your beautiful faces next week.
Bye bye.
Yes. You'll see my initials in your screen next week.
Lovely. Cheers, guys.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.